sure you don't want to get...
No, I'm sure. It's just, we'll just deal with the creaky chair because we've already started.
Creaky chair, oh my God.
And now this will be our intro.
It's the creaky chair episode.
The creaky chair episode.
So how about them USB ports?
Oh my God, yeah. That USB, that was, I was trying to restrain myself from asking if you needed help.
It was an ordeal. It was
But I was sitting there just watching. I was like, oh no. Oh no. Welcome back
to Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa, and we just talk about things we learned, about things we found.
We talk about things that we wrote research papers on.
Yeah.
As, you know, almost
for fun,
yeah, you know.
Because, you know, when you reach adulthood, you realize that the simplicity of high school is actually kind of fun.
I never in a million years would have thought that I would be writing... like multiple page, like 4-page research papers.
Yeah.
For fun.
For fun.
On a like weekly basis.
To chit chat with our friends.
Just to sit down and talk with our friends about our favorite conspiracy theories and cryptozoologist beasts. Cryptozoological, there was the word. That's the word I was looking for.
It's a great word.
English is my first language.
Yes.
I promise.
Oh. You know, it's so interesting the way languages change.
I know. Language is an evolving entity.
Much like Bigfoot.
I don't know if Bigfoot's evolved.
Or is he? Maybe. He could be far beyond us.
Maybe. I mean, the fact that he can, like, has eluded us for so long, except for, like, you know, crappy camcorder footage from the 1990s.
Maybe Bigfoot just is blurry.
Ooh. There's a thought. Maybe he's just blurry.
He's just really blurry. Every day of those days when you're just really blurry. Anyway,
yes. Every day that I'm at work, I'm just blurry.
Just blurry. Days I don't have my coffee, I'm just blurry. So each week, neither of us knows what the other one is going to talk about. Yep. Sammy always talks about cryptids. I always talk about conspiracies. And we always flip a coin. Mm-hmm. It's a penny for our thoughts from our shot glass from our super awesome tour of Old Sacramento and
which
the underground.
Which you should go do if you haven't.
If you're in town. It's awesome. Sacramento, California. And let's see. So since you went first last time.
It's your turn.
It's my turn to flip or to pick.
Your turn to flip. My turn to pick. And then we'll see who goes first.
Okay.
This is getting as hard to figure out as figuring out just who goes first.
I know. So my turn to flip, your turn
put
to flip.
Put it in the shot glass.
Put it in
that
the
way it's easier.
In the shoot glass.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I shipped my pants. Did you ship your pants?
I shot glassed my pants. Oh my God, Tess.
Did you ship your drawers? It's such a great commercial. It's comedy genius. Anyway, okay. So,
all right,
shaking it up. Shake.
I want heads.
Heads. You do.
Yeah.
Tails.
Tails.
Hey,
okay.
You go first.
You go first.
What? That's rigged.
Who's on first?
I'm on first. Okay. So, I'm very excited about this one.
Okay.
This one might be a twofer. We'll see how much information I feel like I get through here.
Ooh, a two-part episode
all
would
right.
be fun.
So, Buzz Aldrin, please don't punch me in the face.
Oh, a national hero.
You're an American hero. You really are a gentleman and a scholar.
He should be a national treasure.
But today, we're talking about the moon landing.
Oh, yes. I actually know people who don't believe the moon landing is real.
And, you know, after some thoughts, I can see why it's a...
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see why people don't believe it.
Absolutely. It's plausible that it's not real.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's
so
like,
I really can...
I can understand why people believe it's not real. Do I think it's not real? No.
No,
I definitely believe we landed on the moon.
Absolutely.
But I can see why people believe that it's fake.
Yes, exactly. Which is pretty much the conclusion I came to.
I'm trying to word it very, very carefully because I know people that really believe this and I don't want to offend them.
But that's why I'm just giving you the facts that I just found.
Yes.
I'm not making judgments.
I'm here for opinions. Hello. You're here for facts.
Here's what I found. So, theorists claim that some or all elements of the Apollo program and the associated moon landings were hoaxes staged by NASA, possibly with the aid of other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
The most notable claim is that the six manned landings from 1969 to 72 were faked, and that 12 Apollo astronauts did not actually walk on the moon. Various groups and individuals have made claims since the mid-1970s that NASA and others knowingly misled the public into believing the landing happened by manufacturing, tampering with, or destroying evidence including photos, tapes, radio, and TV transmissions, moon rock samples, and even killing some key witnesses, which I'll talk about again a little bit later. But, and also, it's interesting, speaking of the moon rock samples, did you see that story recently about that woman? I think she was in Missouri, where she was suing NASA preemptively because when she was a child, her father was friends with Armstrong. And Armstrong gifted this little girl, at the time, a sample from the moon. And she was suing NASA ahead of time to get to keep it because she didn't want NASA to, like, come after her and be like, that's ours. And she wanted to, like, tell them already, that's mine.
Wow, she sounds like a lunatic.
Ah! You! You!
I was waiting. I was like, when is a good moment to drop this one?
Oh, that was great timing.
It was bad timing. I'm sorry.
Speaking of lunatics.
Okay.
In fact, opinion polls have determined that 6 to 20% of Americans, that's a pretty wide gap, 25% of Britons, and 28% of Russians surveyed believed that the U.S. moon landings were fake.
Of course Russians believe that it's fake.
Of course they
because
do.
Because we were in the biggest race with them. Like, exactly. Yeah, we were kind of in a race with the U.K., but let's be real. They weren't really in the race. They were just kind of like... Yeah, we're racing as they go sit in their cardboard box in the backyard and pretend to go off into space. But yeah, Russia was really the only competition we have, so of course they don't believe it's real.
So before we get into the conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
let's look at the facts that we do know according to what our government has told us.
Okay, well, one fact I do know is that we went to the moon in 1969. Thanks, Even Stevens.
Thank you. Thanks, Even Stevens. But first, before we go to 1969, we go back to the beginning in 1609. Hans Lippershey, I hope I said that right, invented the telescope.
Lippershey.
Lippershey. He invented the telescope. But we don't have to go back that far.
That's just a fun fact. Really
interesting that in 1609 the telescope was invented.
That's just a fun fact.
But let's fast forward a few years, just a couple, to 1920.
Okay, just a few.
Robert Goddard suggests sending rockets to the moon. Almost 40 years later, Soviet spacecraft Luna 2 reaches the moon, impacting near the crater Autolycus? I think that's right. 2 years later, JFK suggests the manned lunar program. By 1966, Soviet spacecraft Luna 9 makes a soft landing on the moon. So we've upgraded from lobbing dishwashers at the moon to making them land like independent little toasters. Okay.
You know, there was a Brave Little Toaster movie where they went to Mars. Not the moon, but Mars.
Well,
so it's still,
we threw our toasters.
It's somewhat relevant.
We threw our Brave Little Toasters up there. Just lobbed them, just like unplugged them from the wall.
Just chucked them.
Damn it, Karen! Okay. Bang, zoom, straight to the moon. That's what that was about. So, 1967, the devastating Apollo 1 fire occurs, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be the first manned mission of the Apollo program, sending the first men to the moon.
Right.
But the mission never flew. A cabin fire during a launch rehearsal test at Cape Kennedy Air Force Station launch complex killed all three crew members. Mm-hmm. Just devastating. So then by 1968, NASA's Apollo 8 makes the first manned flight to the moon, circling it 10 times before returning to Earth. And then a year later, Apollo 11 makes the first landing on the moon, returning with samples.
Right.
One of the earliest and most influential books on the topic, the conspiracy, is We Never Went to the Moon, America's $30 Billion Swindle. It was self-published in 1976 by Bill Kaysing. So he really believed in himself.
Really?
He's like, I'm going to write a book, and I'm also going to publish it, which I'm not knocking anybody who does that, because you self-publishers are incredible people.
Yes.
But he's also a conspiracy theorist. He was very into his
He hobby. Really believed in what he preached.
Yes. Despite having no knowledge of rockets or technical writing, Kaysing, he believed in himself, who was a former U.S. Navy officer with a Bachelor of Arts in English, who believed in himself. He was hired as a technical writer in 1956 by Rocketdyne, the company that built the F1 engines used on the Saturn V rocket. So, you know, imagine the hiring process in those days. So a guy with a Bachelor of Arts in English could get a job as a senior technical writer for Rocketdyne.
It's not rocket science.
It's rocket surgery.
It's rocket surgery.
Yes. Oh.
No. But I mean, I guess that's kind of how they looked at it. It's like, it's not rocket science. So he has an English major. He can write stuff. Just go ahead and write about it.
So Kaysing makes a lot of wild claims in this book. But one of them is that the chance of a successful manned moon landing had to be calculated to the 17,000th%. And that despite close monitoring by the USSR, it would have been easier for NASA to fake the moon landing than actually try to get the numbers that close. Mm. So he was like, you guys are never going to make this. It's easier to just fake it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I can understand that. But what's more unbelievable to me than the fact that they had to calculate it out to that small of a percentage was the fact that some guy with just a bachelor's degree could get a really well-paying job at NASA and probably afford a house and a mortgage and a car.
That is pretty unbelievable. Right?
You know,
those were the days.
The millennial dilemma.
The millemma.
The millemma.
The millemma.
The millennial emma.
Oh, man. Yeah, right? This theory is just more and more unbelievable.
I believe more in the millennial dilemma than I do in this conspiracy theory.
You just went there. You just landed on the moon.
I landed on that moon.
You just landed on that moon. So in 1980, the Flat Earth Society accused NASA of faking the landings, arguing that they were staged by Hollywood with Walt Disney, based on a script by Arthur C. Clarke, and directed by Stanley Kubrick, who agreed to the project as long as they shot on location.
I'm sorry. They shot on location on the moon.
You'll get there. Sounds like someone enjoyed 2001 Space Odyssey a little too much. But yeah.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. Mm. So not quite faked. If we go there.
It's faked, but it's not at the same time. Okay. All right. Okay.
So we owe a lot of our technological advances to our competition with Russia and the USSR.
Right.
Motivation for the U.S. to engage the Soviet Union in a space race can be traced to the ongoing Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Landing on the moon was veiled as a national and technological accomplishment that would generate world acclaim. Like, when you get there, you are the, you know, king.
You're the top dogs.
Yes. So it sounds like it's enough of a motive, though, both to either complete the feat, or cheat entirely and let's not and say we did.
Mm-hmm.
But even JFK said in a speech that we were pushing to go to the moon because it was hard. It is a challenge.
Yeah.
We want to push to go further and to go beyond, you know, which everybody should do every day.
Like, yeah.
Don't forget that, guys. Yeah. Like, let's
always fight for your dreams.
Yes.
You start with the moon landing and then you go for a space force.
Yeah. Apparently. But remember, your only competition is you, guys. You know,
and
everyone else is
ISIS.
Taken. So, and space ISIS is your competition. Oh boy.
I'm sorry. This episode is just too easy. Go ahead.
It is,
keep going.
I know, and that's why. We're having a good night tonight.
I've got so many jokes this episode, more than usual. Keep going. I'm ready. I'm rolling with the punches.
Plus, if we faked it and Russia found out, we would be an absolute laughingstock.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It's like people already don't take us seriously anymore, but it's like if they found out that the moon landing was fake.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That would be it for America's reputation.
Yes. Proving a hoax would have been a huge propaganda win for the Soviets. Mm-hmm. So conspiracy theorists also state that to avoid humiliation and ensure the agency would get continued funding, NASA raised about $30 billion not to go to the moon. No, no. But to pay off enough people to keep it quiet that we didn't.
It sounds like
priorities.
It sounds like a great use of taxpayer dollars.
So some conspirators also say that the astronauts couldn't have survived the trip in the first place because of the exposure to radiation from the Van Allen radiation belt and a galactic ambient radiation.
But that's what the spaceship is for. Literally like lead lined to prevent that.
Some even say that Starfish Prime, a high altitude nuclear test in 1962, was a failed attempt to disrupt the Van Allen belt. So they were like trying to launch something up into space.
They were trying to nuke the Van Allen belt.
Yes, to blow everything out of the way so we could send a human through.
Wow. Yeah. These are getting like that. It was ridiculous to start with, but this is just getting.
I know.
Obnoxiously crazy.
I know.
We're going to nuke a radioactive belt.
We're on page
three. We're going to radioactively attack a radioactive belt to get it to stop being radioactive.
Yes.
That makes.
We're just going to push radioactive rocks out of the way.
That makes perfect sense.
Yes. There are two main Van Allen belts, by the way, the inner and the outer belts.
Right.
So. And then there's also a third transient belt in between.
Yes.
So, the inner belt is the most dangerous, containing electric protons. Pew, pew, pew. The outer one has less dangerous, low-energy electrons.
Mm-hmm. Pew, pew, pew.
The Apollo spacecraft passed through the inner belt in a matter of minutes and the outer belt in about 1.5 hours
right.
or so. They were very, very shielded from the ionizing radiation by aluminum hulls of the spacecraft. Even right. Dr. James Van Allen, the discoverer of the belts, rebutted the claims that radiation levels were too harmful for Apollo missions.
Right.
He's like, mm-mm.
Once again, like, the space shuttles are lead-lined to prevent that.
Yes. Exactly. Come on, guys. Another question that was raised by some of the conspirators. Wouldn't radiation have fogged up the film that was sent back? The film was kept in metal containers that stopped radiation from fogging the films.
That was also in lead-lined containers.
Exactly. They were literally, thought of everything.
The film was in a lead-lined container inside the lead-lined spacecraft. So it's like double layers of protection there. So... No.
Some also point to a large solar flare around that time. The Apollo 16 crew could not have survived that massive alleged solar flare when they were on their way to the moon. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But one was not recorded during that journey. There were large solar flares in August of 1972 after Apollo 16 returned to Earth and before the flight of Apollo 17.
Because I'm sure they planned that out.
Exactly. However, could you imagine if that just randomly happened?
That would be kind of crazy.
I bet the sun's fairly unpredictable to a point.
To a point, but it's like solar flares, by the time, like, we can see them coming because the sun is two planets away.
Yeah. Yes.
And we've got really...
Like doing the alphabet on your fingers.
What is it? My very...
Yeah.
Energetic mother just served us 9, and then Pluto's not a planet, so...
9
just
puppies, served us, but she can't serve us puppies because she's not a monster, so...
But yeah, so it's like, the sun is 2 planets away, and we have telescopes that can see a solar flare coming, so we can plan around the solar flares.
That is true.
So, but it's like, even a random solar flare would take a while to get to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like if they were in the middle of a launch, it's not like a random solar flare could just show up while they're launching. We would have seen it coming.
Yeah. I mean, hey, scientist friends, also
dear science people.
conspiriesencryptids@gmail.com.
Because we don't know science.
We will read your emails.
We're just pretty people that have a podcast. I don't even know about
it. Please help.
Tessa's a pretty person. Tessa makes me look pretty with her Photoshop skills.
We're very pretty people.
But we don't do science. I have a major in computer electronics and...
That's that's science.
It's computers. It's not predicting solar flares.
That's true.
So maybe a meteorologist.
Yeah. Hey, tell us.
Dear meteorologist.
Tell us about solar flares.
How do solar flares work? I don't feel like Googling it myself.
So two conspirators. We digress. Two conspirators, Mary Bennett and David Percy, have claimed in their book, Dark Moon, Apollo and the Whistleblowers, that with all the known and unknown hazards of the moon, the agency would not risk broadcasting an astronaut getting sick or dying on live television.
But they've done that.
Yeah. Now, and that makes sense, especially since NASA did incur a great deal of public humiliation and potential political opposition to the program when they lost an entire crew in the Apollo 1 fire during a ground test. Like, people have seen some stuff.
What was it, Apollo 13 that crashed that had, like, the big explosion? Or was it Apollo 12? I don't know. I remember.
Look that up. Which one had the...
Because it was, like, a crew of, like, four or five people. I'm going to look that up.
You do that.
You keep talking, I'll look that up.
I'll keep talking. So, the moon landing conspiracies rely heavily on NASA photos. They point to some oddities in the photos and films taken on the moon. For instance, in some photos, crosshairs seem to be behind the objects. The cameras were fitted with a Rousseau plate, making it impossible for any photographed object to appear in front of the grid, suggesting objects have been pasted over them in post-production. This only appears in copied and scanned photos, not the originals. It's caused by overexposure, which makes the white areas of the emulsion bleed over the thin black crosshairs. Mm-hmm. Crosshairs are also sometimes rotated or in the wrong place. This could also be a result of cropping. The quality of the photos is implausibly high for the time. That's what some people say. This could be explained by much like my selfies. I had a friend comment recently, "Do you take a bad photo?" Of course I do. I just don't post them. There were many poor quality photos taken by the Apollo astronauts. NASA chose to only post the best samples. Well, also, obviously. The astronauts used a high-resolution Hasselblad 500 EL camera with Carl Zeiss optics and a 70 millimeter medium format film magazine. Put that in your hot shoe and smoke it. That's a sexy camera. It's NASA. They've got, like, state-of-the-art cameras, especially for that time, so. Yeah.
So the spacecraft I was thinking of was the Challenger.
Yes, you
were. That blew up in 86, which was a year before I was born. But I remember watching that explosion.
Which was the movie? Which was the movie?
That was Apollo 13.
It was Apollo 13 when they circled
the moon. That came out in 95.
With Tom Hanks.
Yep. But yeah, the Challenger, I remember watching footage of that in elementary school. Mm-hmm. Like, we were learning about space missions.
I remember that.
And we watched, like, the explosion of the Challenger.
So obviously accidents have happened on TV.
And yeah, absolutely they have.
So there are also no stars in any of the photos. The Apollo 11 astronauts have also claimed in a post-mission press conference not remembering seeing any stars. But the astronauts were talking about naked eye sightings of stars during the lunar daytime. Mm-hmm. They regularly sighted stars through the spacecraft navigation optics while aligning their inertial reference platforms.
Right.
All manned landing happened during lunar daytime. Like, yeah. It works the same way. Moon just doesn't have an atmosphere, but light pollution is still a thing on the moon.
Absolutely it is, because the moon's a reflective surface.
Exactly.
The reason the moon shines at night is because it's reflecting sunlight.
Can you imagine, though, being on the light side of the moon and then there's, like, no stars because the light is bouncing off of the surface? That would be incredible.
Well, because the moon doesn't rotate on its axis.
No.
The dark side of the moon.
Tidal locked. Yeah.
Yeah. The dark side of the moon is always dark. So it's like if they went over to, like, what is it? The Sea of Tranquility is on the dark side of the moon?
I think so. What is on the dark side of the moon?
We should have looked that up.
I want to know what's on the dark side of the moon.
They've taken
cool.
a picture of it, though. I saw that, like, just this year.
I mean, we've got pictures of Pluto. I'm sure
they took a picture of the dark side of the moon, and it was really neat. It was
weird.
The caption was, "The moon is mooning us for the first time." And I was like, that's great. But yeah, I think the Sea of Tranquility is, I know, but I think the Sea of Tranquility is on the dark side of the moon. And yeah, I'm sure if they'd gone there, they would have definitely been able to see stars.
Oh, yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
But
for sure.
But yeah, because the moon is a reflective surface, they're getting all sorts of light pollution.
Exactly.
And they're not going to be able to see. I mean, you can't see stars when the sun's out.
Exactly.
So
So the angle and the color of the, like, the shadows are inconsistent, suggesting artificial lights were used. That's what's another conspiracy theory. Yeah, the shadows on the moon are very complicated.
Yeah.
Because light doesn't just come from the sun, like we were just talking about, but also from sunlight reflected from the Earth and other surfaces on the moon and sunlight reflected from the astronauts and the lunar module. So they've got light bouncing from everywhere.
Yeah. Because I mean, their suits had like
changes.
Their suits had like that foil looking material. Mm-hmm. The spacecraft had that material. And yeah, like lunar rocks are like a silvery dust kind of material that reflect light. So it's like, yeah, of course the shadows are coming from all different directions.
Exactly. Then they also say some identical backgrounds and are in the background of some of the photos, which claim to be a few miles apart, suggesting a painted background was used, but not necessarily the case. I mean, have you been to the moon? Have you seen the moon?
You don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know what she looks like.
You don't know her life.
You don't. You don't know what she's been through.
You don't know what she's a beautiful surface.
She is.
She's free real estate.
I love that that's been your go-to meme for the week.
The week. It brings me joy.
It's free real estate.
It's free real estate. So the number of photos too that was taken is also implausibly high, up to one photo per 50 seconds. But simplified gear with fixed settings allowed two photos a second. And many were taken immediately after each other as stereo pairs or panorama sequences.
Right.
So guys, as NASA, of course they have cool shit before everybody else.
Right?
They've got the really, really awesome stuff. So the photos contain artifacts like two seemingly matching C's on a rock on the ground, maybe related to studio props, but you've never gotten dust on your lens? I mean,
right?
That happens, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
So who took the video of Neil Armstrong stepping onto the moon?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a weird perspective.
That was the, just read about that a week or two ago.
Well, NASA thought of that too. Apparently, the lunar module did.
Yeah.
While still on the steps, Armstrong deployed a modularized equipment stowage assembly from the side of the lunar module. Mm-hmm. This housed, amongst other things, the TV camera.
Yep.
This meant that upward of 600 million people on Earth could watch the live feed.
Yep.
And now, here in 2018, we still can't get a reliable signal from a reporter across the street from my station.
I can't even get a reliable
what gives, guys?
Cell phone signal in my house sometimes.
Seriously.
Without connecting to the Wi-Fi. Yeah, that's something you'll have to explain to me as a reporter that I've always wondered is why there's such a lag between when you're watching news, you'll see them talking to the reporter on the scene and they'll sit there for 10 seconds and go, yes, and, you know, and it's like, Skype doesn't have that lag. Why don't you guys just use Skype?
Well, see, technically, when they're listening, when they put their hand to their ear, sometimes they're operating on a satellite versus a backpack, and if they're dealing with a backpack, they are dealing with a cell phone signal, so it has to go up to a tower and then back.
Gotcha.
And the signal's actually slower than if we are sighted directly into a different kind of, satellite tower.
The more you know.
Right, the more you know.
As the star goes across.
Yeah. But we can change the delays, so that can be different. So, of course, there's evidence that everyone points to. The flag placed on the surface by the astronauts fluttered despite there being no wind on the moon. This suggests that it was filmed on Earth and a breeze caused the flag to flutter.
Or it could have just been people walking past it.
Actually, in fact, the flag was fastened to an upside-down L-shaped rod, so it didn't hang directly down.
Other yes.
than it would have just...
Yeah, yeah.
Womp, womp.
Yeah, because, yeah.
And so the flag only seemed to flutter when the astronauts were moving it into position. Mm-hmm. So without any air drag, these movements caused the free corner of the flag to swing like a pendulum for some time.
Yeah.
The flag was rippled because it had been folded during storage. So the ripples could have been mistaken for movement in a still photo.
Yeah.
Videos show that when the astronauts let go of the flagpole, it vibrates briefly and then remains still.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, that some stuff is missing.
Okay.
Blueprints and design development drawings of the machines involved are allegedly missing. Apollo 11 data tapes containing telemetry and the high-quality video of the first moonwalk are also missing. Website xenophilia.com documents a hoax claim that blueprints for the Saturn V rocket, Apollo lunar module, lunar roving vehicle, and associated equipment are all missing. And yet, on other pages of the same site, some of those blueprints that there are mentioned are, they appear, they're right there.
Hmm.
So, Which is it, guys?
Are they there or are they not?
Did you guys find him? Should you maybe tell somebody?
No. We're not going to do that.
Apollo 11 missing tapes were those that were recorded from Apollo 11's slow scan television telecast in its raw format on telemetry data tape at the time. Basically, they recorded a high-definition version just in case the transmission back to Earth didn't go as planned.
Right.
Since the broadcast went off without a hitch, though, little priority was put on preserving those tapes in the years immediately following the mission. Yeah. So that kind of sounds odd to me that they didn't keep those.
That is kind of odd, especially since they were filmed in high definition. It's like you would think that, hey, for future generations, let's save the HD versions compared to the really crappy, grainy live feed videos.
Exactly. Well, you know how, you know, like those incidents where we find out we accidentally taped over mom and dad's wedding video to save the Friends finale when Rachel has her baby.
Are you talking from experience?
No.
that look kind of says yes.
No, my parents didn't have a wedding video. But in the early 1980s, NASA's Landsat program was facing a severe data tape shortage, and it's likely the tapes were erased and reused. So, oops.
That sucks.
Yeah, that's probably what happened to them. But in November 2006, Cosmos Online reported that about 100 data tapes recorded in Australia during the Apollo 11 mission had been found in a small marine science laboratory in the main physics building at the Curtin University of Technology in Perth, Australia. One of the old tapes was sent to NASA for analysis, but the slow scan television images were not on that tape. So there are some tapes that do exist in Australia, but they're still missing that tape.
Fun fact about our podcast, Australia is our number 4 listener.
Hey, hi. Hi, guys.
G'day.
Oh. Hi, guys.
Put a shrimp on the barbie. I hate myself.
I would
myself.
Love to visit you. Please invite me.
I
you
hate
can leave
myself.
Sammy at home.
I'm so sorry.
I promise I'll leave Sammy at home. But I would love to come hang out with you guys. Welcome us to. Maybe we'll go do a live episode with you guys.
I would love to go see Perth or like Brisbane or.
I would love to
Sydney.
Go see where that guy was found. The Somerton man.
I have no idea what this is.
Oh, another episode. Next episode. You guys stay tuned. I'm going to talk about the Somerton Man, I promise.
Okay, so next episode, the Somerton Man.
Yes.
I promise I won't go look that up this
week.
Don't do
it. Because
now I'm really interested.
You guys don't do it either. Stop that. Stop that. Knock it off. You put your phone down.
You stop that right now.
Stop that right now. So, you can do whatever you want. You're good. A free individual.
We can't tell you what to do, but we highly encourage you don't, please.
So in a television program about the moon landing hoax allegations, Fox Entertainment Group compiled a list of 10 astronauts and 2 civilians related to the manned spacecraft program as having been possibly killed as part of a cover-up. They are Theodore Freeman, who was killed ejecting from a T-38 after encountering a bird strike in October of 1964. Elliot C. and Charlie Bassett both died in a T-38 in bad weather in February 1966. Virgil, Gus, Grissom, Ed White, and Roger B. Chaffee, the crew that was killed in the Apollo 1 fire in 1967. Edward Ed Givens, car accident, 1967. Clifton C.C. Williams, killed ejected from a T-38 in October 1967. Michael J. Mike Adams, the only pilot killed during the X-15 flight test program. He was just a test pilot, not a NASA astronaut, but had flown the X-15 above 50 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Henry Lawrence Jr., F-104 crash, December 1967. He had just been selected as a pilot within the U.S. Air Force's Manned Orbiting Laboratory program, which was later canceled. Thomas Ronald Barron, automobile collision with a train, April 27th, 1967, 6 days after testifying before Olin Teague's House subcommittee on NASA oversight hearing held at Cape Kennedy, Florida, concerning the Apollo 1 fire, after which he was fired. Barron was an outspoken critic of Apollo 1, and he and his family were killed when the train struck their car at a train crossing. It was deemed an accident.
Mm.
And Brian D. Welch, a leading official in NASA's Public Affairs Office and Director of Media Services. He died a few months later after appearing in the media to debunk the Fox hoax television show I mentioned. He died of a heart attack at the age of 42. I could go on. There is a very, very long list of deaths and injuries that could be related to this conspiracy.
Woof.
Yeah. Is that...
That just got dark.
A lot of them died in 1967.
Yeah. Kind of starting to remind me of, like, the conspiracy of, like, all the deaths that happened during the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yeah, right. Mm. Kind of brings to mind. But in June 1977, NASA issued a fact sheet responding to recent claims that the Apollo moon landing was faked. It's particularly blunt in regards to the idea of faking the moon landings to be preposterous and outlandish. It points to the rocks and dust samples collected from the surface as pretty plausible evidence. It also notes that the whole program was completed under intense scrutiny of the news media, from liftoff to splashdown. Another fact sheet was released again in 2001, the day before Fox's broadcast of conspiracy theory, Did We Land on the Moon? The documentary reinvigorated the public's interest in conspiracy theories and the possibility that the moon landings were fake, provoking NASA to respond again. And that's about it.
That's fascinating.
Right? Like, it was very interesting.
It really is. Like, I mean, once again, I can see why people believe it. But I feel like there's enough evidence out there to disprove this conspiracy theory that I feel like if you believe it, it's because you want to believe it, not because it actually happened. You're if you really, truly, and once again, I'm not trying to, like, talk bad about people, but I mean, I just feel like there's so much evidence out there proving that it actually did happen that it's really difficult to stand with your beliefs of that it didn't happen.
These days it's so easy to doctor things. It's really hard to decide what to do and don't believe. And especially because, I mean, even then there were camera tricks that people could use. So I can see that the speculation, especially with the advent of sci-fi around that time too.
Yeah,
that we were getting really good. So there's maybe a question. Now, I mean, maybe it was cheaper to just go ahead.
If the lunar landing happened nowadays, I would be more inclined to get on board with this conspiracy theory, because it's like, with the level of quality in, like, computer graphics and the way that, you know, 95% of a movie these days is not real.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, we can even CGI a person's face to make them look younger. So it's like, you know, if it had happened these days, I would be more easily swayed to believe this conspiracy theory. But it's like, this was the late 1960s, early 1970s. And it's like, yes, while there were methods to doctor things, they weren't as sophisticated as they are now.
Exactly.
And I feel like it would have been a lot more work. Now, granted, could our government have put that work in? Absolutely. They do a lot of shady stuff all the time. And they dump a lot of money into stuff like this and cover-ups. But I don't feel like that's plausible.
Absolutely.
You know, especially with it being so easy to uncover that sort of stuff these days. It's like, I don't feel like our government would have put themselves in a place where it could ever come to light.
That's the thing. If anybody found out, if anybody was able to prove it, that it was real, we would just, it would, our reputation would just be so on the line. And I think that it's just too much too much of a burden to, and a responsibility to put on the human nature.
Yeah. And you have to realize, it's like, if it wasn't real, every president that we've ever had since then would know about it, you know, because it's like, there are certain things that get passed on to every president.
Absolutely.
Like their
Absolutely.
First day after being sworn in, they are sat down with, you know, a list of, like, all sorts of things that they need to know that maybe we as the American public don't know.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, and it's not just the president. There's a bunch of people in our positions of power in government that know these secrets. And it's like, I feel like this is too big of a secret to be covering up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Especially, like, with our reputation on the line. Like I said, we're already having enough of a problem these days with our reputation that it's like, if the lunar landing was fake, they would have found it by now.
Yeah.
I really believe in my heart of hearts that after, what is it, 40 years, 50 years?
Yeah. It's
been almost 50 years.
50 years. Yeah. I believe so.
So it's like, I feel like,
a little over 40 years. No, 50 years. No, you're right.
Yeah, 50 years. So it's like, I feel like if it hasn't come up after 50 years, it's probably not going to because it's real. It actually happened. So that's my opinion on it. Like I said, once again, I'm not trying to discredit people who do believe in it. It's just, those are my thoughts on it. That it's like, if after 50 years it hasn't come to light, it probably can't come to light because there's nothing to come to light.
Exactly. The evidence just isn't there. And like I said, they probably recorded over the tape anyway. Yeah. It was really interesting to listen to. But next time when I talk about it, let's cover why we haven't been back. And that'll be in my second part.
Okay, so next episode won't be about the guy from Australia.
Next one will definitely be about the one from Australia, but we will return to this episode at some point.
Okay, yes. Awesome. Well, let's take a little break. And then when we come back, we will talk about my creepy crawler.
Yes, sounds great.
So, all right, be back. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/cryptidpod and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title for free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/cryptidpod to get started today.
So, why Audible? Well, Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. I just downloaded Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers by Stanton T. Friedman and Kathleen Martin. I'm so excited to listen to it.
I saw that one pop up on like my recommended list.
It should have.
I need to download it.
But you can download whatever you want. Everything for free with this trial.
Yeah, you can download any book you want. And this would be a great way to have something to listen to during the off weeks where we don't put out an episode.
You're so right.
You know, give you something to listen to on your drive to and from work.
Absolutely.
I know I've got a half hour commute to work one way. So it's like I listen to podcasts and audiobooks and Audible's a great service for that.
We can only do so much.
We can only do so much. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/cryptopod. Again, that's
Just do the tag again.
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/cryptopod. Again, that's audibletrial.com/CRYPTIPOD for your free audiobook. And remember,
Big Brother is watching.
All right, so we're back.
Yay, we're back.
So now it's my turn
to
go over our cryptids.
To freak me out with another cryptid that's going to keep me up for the rest
of
the
night. They're always creepy, aren't they? Maybe
weird.
Sometime I'll have to cover something like...
You'd only cover cryptids.
Cryptids. Oh, man, that was a good one.
Yes.
Maybe I'll have to, like, one of these times cover something, like, nice and... Sweet.
Are there sweet cryptids?
Angels.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could probably consider an angel a cryptid.
Weeping angels?
No, that's Doctor Who. Those aren't really cryptids.
That's just a fandom creature.
But yeah, like, I guess an angel could probably be considered a cryptid. Like, aside from the fact that it's a religious icon, you know, people have claimed to see angels. So, you could probably consider it a cryptid.
I'd say so.
And then I'm already going to tell you right now, and this is a spoiler for all of you guys, because, I mean, you should probably see this one coming anyway, but for Christmas, I'm going to cover Santa Claus.
Well, of course.
Because, I mean...
That's not surprised at all.
I mean, it's like, usually we try to keep it candid, but it's like that one, I feel like everybody kind of knows that one's coming.
Bowl of jelly.
But I've got other ones that you don't know are coming for, like, our Halloween episode.
So do I.
Hmm.
So there. Well, freak me out now.
All right. So over the past few decades, multiple movies have been made about gigantic carnivorous worms that dwell beneath our feet, waiting to sneak up unexpectedly and devour us.
It's Alaskan bullworm!
P.S. We're chock full of SpongeBob references here at Conspiracies and Cryptids.
I'm a child of the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yep. So most of us millennials have seen movies like Dune is a video game. Dune and many of the Tremors movies and know what kind of worms I'm referring to. But what if I tell you that there's an actual cryptid about a giant flesh-eating worm?
Oh.
So this is the Mongolian death worm.
The Mongolian death worm.
We need to, like, that's our next vector.
Yes.
So it's like, you know how they had, like, like Alaskan bullworm in different fonts.
Yes.
That'll be it.
Oh, perfect. But Mongolian death. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It's gonna happen. That's coming. That'll be on merch. Oh, speaking of merch.
Hey, before we really
get into this, yeah.
We have a shop.
We have a shop now. So if you want to buy stuff with our logo and our fun little slogans and phrases on them,
yes.
You can buy stuff from us now. Please buy our stuff.
Yes.
Our cheap, useless junk.
I design everything also myself, except for our logo, which is a friend of Sammy's.
Our logo is designed by my great friend, Brittany.
Yes, thank you, Brittany.
But everything else, like all of our other fun designs that we also have up on our vision board, were designed by the lovely Tessa. Yay! She is an amazing graphic designer.
Wear my stuff! And if you guys have any special requests, like you want to see a design on something specific, just let us know.
Because like there's a couple of things where it's like I only put them on like stickers or art prints. But if you would like to see some of those designs on a t-shirt or a tank top, stuff like that, send us a message and let us know.
Yes. We'll make it happen.
Because, yeah, right now we've only got a couple of things that are on a vast amount of stuff, and then a couple of them are just on one or two things. So just let us know. But to find that, you can either go through our website, and there's a shop button now that you can click, and it'll take you to it. Or you can go to society6.com/cryptipod.
Yes.
So that's society and then the number 6, not spelled out. So society6.com/cryptipod.
Yeah.
So that's like an unofficial ad.
Excellent. I know we're sneaky too, because I know sneaky. We just ran one. Now we're gonna do our own little sneaky. Go buy our stuff.
So represent. Go buy our stuff. Alright, so back to my cryptid, back to the Mongolian death worm. Yeah. So, legends passed down among Mongolian nomads have been around for centuries about a giant worm that would spray acid on its prey and its touch could kill.
Ew!
Its name in legends is the Olgoi Korkoi.
Oh.
I don't know if I pronounced that. I don't know if I pronounced that right. I don't speak Mongolian.
Interesting.
And it was known to lay eggs in the intestines of camels, which is what gave it its red color.
Ew.
The creature is widely believed in by the Mongolian people and was even described in detail by the Mongolian Prime Minister Damdin Bazar in 1922. He said it's shaped like a sausage, about 2 feet long, has no head nor legs, and it is so poisonous that merely to touch it means instant death. It lives in the most desolate parts of the Gobi Desert.
Sounds like a very clever way to teach people not to touch themselves.
Or not to go out into the desert.
Yeah, that too. Or touch themselves in the desert.
Don't touch yourself in the desert.
The moral of the story is don't touch yourself in the desert. And that's the title of the episode.
It'll be part of the title. I can almost guarantee that's going to be part of the title of the episode. Okay, so the description of it is it can be anywhere between 2 and 5 feet long, or that's up to 1.5 meters long. Some sources even say up to 7 feet long, just depending on where you look. It's very thick. In some places, it's as big as a man's forearm. So, I mean, I've got very small forearms, but it's a thick worm.
That's a good size worm.
That's a good size worm. Red in color, like an intestine filled with blood.
Ew.
Although some places have said that it's gray in appearance or yellow in appearance, but that, like, a lot of the thoughts are maybe that's just, like, the larvae or the different colors, but the adult version is red, like blood
gross.
Red. has a gaping mouth with sharp inward-pointing teeth. Some sources say that it has a spiky pointed end, not like a tail, but like one end is the mouth and then it like tapers down to a pointy end.
It kind of reminds me of the bug thingies in that movie Dreamcatcher.
I don't know if I've seen that movie.
It's an old Stephen King adaptation, and it's really, really good. If anybody's seen it, it's really good. Whodunit? And there's these things, and they're kind of like chest burrowers, though, like you see in like Alien stuff, but that kind of body style, but they're red and slimy, but they're aliens.
Maybe that's where they drew their inspiration from.
But go see that movie. It's pretty good.
Maybe I will.
Anyway, go ahead.
It can spit corrosive yellow saliva that in some sources say that it can even, like the saliva can even corrode through steel. And then some places say that it can create blasts of electricity, but this power is thought to be nonsense folklore.
Oh, well.
Right?
That's what I thought.
When I read that, I was like, that's nonsense.
That's nonsense.
Okay. So there's been there haven't been a lot of sightings, but there's been a lot of expeditions to find it. Oh. The first known one was recorded in 1926 when a man or a paleontologist named Roy Chapman Andrews documented it in his book On the Trail of the Ancient Man. So this is, oh, where did, oh, stupid. I keep forgetting. I hate iPads. I really do. I feel like an old person. Okay. So this is what Roy Andrews looked like.
Oh, he's a stud. He's got a very, very soft face though.
He does have a very, very soft face.
Piercing eyes. They're almost like a, like Photoshop. Like you can just pop them out like a doll's eyes. He looks kind of dead. Is he dead?
No. I mean, now.
Well, yeah.
But at the time, no. Also, let me just quick show you an artist rendition of what the Mongolian death worm looks like.
Yes. This looks a lot like the thing from Dreamcatcher. Go see that movie. It's really good.
I'm going to go see it. I'll put that on my list of things to do. Okay. So, yeah, he wrote about it in his book, which was called On the Trail of Ancient Man. And just as a, like, point of reference, that book was about his theory that humankind actually originated in the East, like in Asia. Like, his theories were a lot about, like, you know, they've got the most, like, well-documented and recorded history, so he figured most ancient man might have actually originated around Asia.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he was on an expedition to Asia as part of the field research to the birthplace of modern humanity. And during his expedition, he heard tales of the Olgoi Kokori, or Korkoi, where the large intestine worm is what that translates to.
I see.
Some sources say that he saw what was said to be the tail of the worm, but some sources don't. The sources that do, though, say that he denied it was a worm. And stated, but he did make sure to state that he does not believe that the creature exists, despite all the reports around the Gobi region.
Hmm.
The next expedition was between the next expeditions were between 1946 and 1949. During this time period, the USSR's Academy of Sciences funded a series of expeditions led by Dr. Yuri Olov into the Gobi Desert, because at this point in time, Mongolia was occupied by the USSR. During one of these expeditions, a geologist named Donzong, who spoke the local Mongolian dialect, was informed to ask about the death worm. So he was told by the other people on the expedition, ask the locals about this worm, see what they say. He thought that it was just a joke until he talked to the locals, and like he was expecting them to like not know what he was talking about. Yeah. He thought that like his cohorts were just like, you know, telling him to go find blinker fluid.
Go find elbow grease. Yeah.
But he was surprised when everybody told him about it, especially an elderly man in the community informed him not only was he aware of the creature, but that he'd heard about it on many different occasions from Gobi nomads. He'd not seen it himself, but believed in it completely. He said that the worm was known to live about 80 miles southeast of where they were currently located.
Hmm.
And it hibernates beneath the sand dunes for most of the years, only venturing out during June and July when it's hottest, and that's its feeding time. Many of the scientists on the expedition mocked the description of the death worm, but the elderly man reprimanded them, saying, "You laugh only because you know nothing and understand nothing. The Olgoi Korkoi is a terrible thing." So, So the locals definitely really, really believed in it, not just a little bit, but wholeheartedly believed in it. The next expeditions were, there was three separate expeditions in the early 90s and early 2000s led by Ivan Makarel. He was a Czech cryptozoologist. So he was what I aspire to be when I grow up.
Yes.
He had organized expeditions in search of the Loch Ness Monster, the Tasmanian Tiger, and the Elephant Bird. And he mounted three expeditions to Mongolia in search of the death worm.
You know, Dumbo doesn't appreciate being called an elephant bird.
I've seen so many things, but I've seen an elephant fly. I didn't sing that right. But anyway, the Tasmanian tiger, though, that's not actually a cryptid. That's a real thing that's just extinct. But maybe it's a cryptid in the fact that people have claimed to see it. Actually, there was just a couple weeks ago, there was a possible sighting of a Tasmanian tiger.
Oh, I think I read about that.
Yeah,
oh.
Like somebody caught it in, like, you know, their home security footage. Whoa. And it looked like it could have been a Tasmanian tiger. But weird. those are known to have gone extinct in, like, the 1800s?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
Somebody,
like,
had a private zoo.
Like, late 1800s or something like that.
Chernobyl.
Or, maybe. But no, the Tasmanian tiger was in Australia, so I don't think it'd be coming out of Chernobyl.
No. Well, you never know. Things mutate.
Yeah, well. But yeah, so that maybe it's a cryptid in that sense, yeah. That it's like, it's an extinct creature that people still see. Oh, I mean, the Loch Ness Monster's kind of along the same lines.
Yeah.
Where it's like an extinct, it's a potentially extinct species that's
still living in one area. Yeah. Kind of like Tahoe Tessie, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the, what is it? That one fish that they thought was extinct and then found off the, like, coast of Africa.
Oh.
The coelacanth.
Yes.
That was, like, a cryptid.
Yeah.
Because people said that they saw it and then they actually did find it.
Then they were like, oh, actually, that does exist.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe it's like that. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
So on his 1990 trip, Mackerel came to the conclusion that the death worm created its venom by consuming a native poisonous plant called the goyo plant, which is a very toxic plant. So he thought that if this worm is actually venomous and can shoot venom, it's gotten its venom from developing sort of like an immunity from eating this poisonous plant, and that created its own sort of the toxin. Mm. 2 years later, in 1992, on his second trip to Mongolia, members of a Buddhist monastery warned him that the worm was a supernatural evil and that further searching for the creature was a danger to his life. During this trip, he apparently had a nightmare about the worm and woke up with unexplainable blood-filled boils covering his back. And I actually saw while I was doing my research.
Ew.
Yeah. While I was doing my research for this, I actually saw a interview with his son who was on the expedition with him and recanted the tale. And, you know, was like, his father was asleep and he was like, you know, couldn't be woken up and was like, you know, thrashing around like you do with a nightmare sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when his father woke up, he said, yeah, that he'd had a terrible dream that the worm had, like, snuck up on him and latched itself onto his back and was, like, you know, like, eating away at his back.
Oh, no. Ew. Ooh.
And he then all of a sudden said that he felt a discomfort in his back. And when they, like, pulled up his shirt, there were, like, blood-filled boils on his back.
Ew.
And there's no real explanation as to what that is.
That's weird.
So some people have said that, you know, maybe that's actual evidence that happened.
Yeah. Ew. So. That's creepy. Ooh.
Ooh. So, 12 years later, in 2004, wait, 1992 to 2004, yeah, 12 years later.
Okay.
Math is not my first language.
No. Neither is mine.
In 2004, he went on his third and final expedition to Mongolia during the summertime, which, as we've talked about, was the worm's prime time of coming out of hibernation. He was there, like, end of July through August. Although they spent the entire trip flying over the desert. They didn't actually venture into it. They flew over the desert with many, like, high-sensored video cameras and stuff like that, but they found no conclusive evidence.
Yeah.
Mackerel is known to be, or was, I think he passed away. I should have looked that up. He was known to be the leading expert on the death worm. Though he concluded that the creature was more than likely nothing more than local mythology or even a psychological problem brought on by the desert's extreme heat. So basically he was saying that, like, the desert's extreme heat could have caused mirages, which in turn caused a generalized fear, like a group psychosis of people, like, fearing this mirage that they've all jointly seen.
Hmm.
During expeditions, they use a number of methods to try to locate and capture one of the death worms, to include bucket traps and even vibration devices inspired by the movie Dune.
Oh.
So literally, they watch the movie Dune and go, that's clever.
That's a good idea.
Let's give that a shot.
Let's shake them out.
Fun fact, the worms in Dune and Tremors were based on this cryptid.
Isn't that just like shaking an anthill or an ant farm? You just close up all their
tunnels. But that'll make them want to burrow up.
Ah!
Because the point of, like, tunnels and ant hills is to allow oxygen flow into the dirt.
True, that's a good point. So they'll just burrow their way
out. They will burrow their way out to get back to where the oxygen is. The next thing that we talk about is in 2005, Richard Freeman who is a zoological journalist and cryptozoologist from the UK Center of Fortean Zoology, went on an expedition in search of the death worm. Although his expedition failed to find anything, he does believe it exists in some form. He said, simply from talking to the people in and around Mongolia and noting their very real fear of it, he thinks it has to be a real animal, but he believes that it might not be a worm. He figured out was that it's too hot in the Gobi Desert for it to actually be a traditional worm, like one of those segmented sort of worms, because it'd be too hot for their exoskeletons. Like, it'd cause them to kind of boil from the inside. But yeah, he said that he thought that for sure it was some form of real animal, because he said that he interacted with a family that literally packed up and moved their entire, like, home and tent because they heard that there were sightings in the area of this one.
Whoa.
So he said that, logically speaking, there's no possible way for this just to be a fictitious creature for it to incite this deep of a fear in it.
Yeah, the people are like, no, we'll just move. Yeah. Leave.
Because it's like, wow. People aren't going to just up and move off of nothing but speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there has to be some form of reality grounding that fear.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his idea about it.
Interesting.
In 2008, on season two, episode two of the show Destination Truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't watched it, but if you guys are interested, you can go watch that. There was a whole episode about the Mongolian death worm. It's season two, episode two of Destination Truth. It's a reality TV series. It covered an expedition to Mongolia.
Oh.
The expedition itself was conducted between 2006 and 2007, but the episode itself aired in 2008. But they didn't come up with any conclusive evidence, so there's spoilers. But it would still be interesting to watch, and I should probably go find that and just kind of watch that, because it sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, August of 2009, David Ferrier,
uh-huh.
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe he's the Dark Tourist guy, isn't he?
I don't know. I just know that he's a TV entertainment reporter.
Yeah.
Is it Ferrier?
Ferrier.
Ferrier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was French. I mean, I'm sure it probably derives from French, but... Not, it's got an Americanized pronunciation. David Ferrier was part of an expedition to Mongolia. This expedition also came up as non-conclusive, but he did conduct a series of interviews with locals who have claimed to see the worm and was able to figure out that the sightings for the worm reached their peak in the 1950s, which was quite a few years after the worm came into the public knowledge, which was in the late 1920s. The last piece of information that I could find about this was from 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I was unable to find it, but there is reportedly a film footage evidence of this worm.
Oh, really?
Somebody apparently caught it on film, but I couldn't find it anywhere.
Mm.
So I don't know how real that is, but there were definitely quite a few sites that mentioned that there was like a sighting of it caught
somewhere.
On film.
Oh.
So, the only one that I could find was just a video of some grub squirming through the ground. And I was like, that's like maybe an inch or two long.
This is it.
Yeah. So, it's like, I don't think that was
video too.
I don't think that was the footage that they were referring to. But
probably not.
There's a couple of different explanations for what this creature is. One is that it is an unknown species of worm lizard, which is a real thing.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's... It looks like a snake, but it's technically a worm.
Mm.
Or not a worm, a lizard. Sorry, it's technically a lizard.
Uh-huh.
So there's actually a whole genus of these lizard or worm lizards. They're called Amphisbaena or Amphisbaenids.
Mm.
They actually derive their name from a mythological creature called an Amphisbaena.
Oh.
But yeah, they look like a snake. They're just a legless, armless lizard.
Interesting.
So, like I said, they look like a snake, but they're technically a lizard.
Hmm.
And they, a lot of times, can get mistaken for large worms. You know, they can get up to a few feet long.
But they're bitey, too.
They're not usually as bitey as, like, snakes are.
Hmm.
But yeah, and they can either be pale in color. They come in a wide variety of colors. So, so some people think it might be an unknown species of this worm lizard.
Okay.
Others think it might be a unknown species of sand boa. which, you know, they're boa constrictors that live in the deserts. Some people think it might just be a red one that's out there. Another explanation is that is a death adder or cobra, which are both species of snakes that are known to be able to spit venom, which is what this worm can do. So some people think maybe it was just misclassified.
Something had already rusted and it looked like it had spit venom through metal.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And then the last explanation is that it is a living fossil that is either recently gone extinct or is very rare. Living fossils are things like the coelacanth that we talked about. Even some species of sea turtles are considered living fossils because a living fossil is basically a type of creature that hasn't changed or evolved at all since they were, since first fossil evidence of them has been found. So, like, the coelacanth, they can trace fossil evidence of that back to, like, almost the Precambrian
period. Yeah, and that thing hasn't changed at all.
And it hasn't changed at all in millions of years. So that's what's classified as a living fossil. I see. And there are quite a few cryptids that are considered living fossils. Nessie's one of them. The Mokilimembe, which is, like, a dinosaur creature that lives in... it's a dinosaur-like creature, brontosaurus-like creature that lives in the Congo. I'll talk about that one at some point. I'm finally alluding to topics in future episodes. But yeah, so that is the Mongolian death worm.
Very cool.
Super creepy.
The
Alaskan bullworm. It makes me want to go watch Tremors and Dune again.
Yeah, I totally want to go back and watch
I need to watch Dreamcatchers.
Yes, yeah, Dreamcatcher. It's really good. It's very good. And also, yeah, I think you should watch Dark Tourist, David Ferrier. If I have the guy right, it's an interesting show. He's kind of an annoying tourist.
Is he?
But just because I'm a very, like, just go with the flow. Like, let's do it. But he, like, causes a lot of trouble and, like, kind of holds people up sometimes. And it's like, I would hate you as another tourist.
Kind of like a, what was that stupid?
But for the sake of the story.
What was that stupid Viner's name that did all sorts of stupid stuff while he was, like, touring different countries?
Oh, Logan Paul?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Like, that kind of tourist?
Yeah. I wouldn't say he was that irritating.
Not that bad?
No, no. But he was. But still, he was a little, he kind of plays clueless. But it's interesting. He does go into some really interesting places.
I'll have to check that out.
I would definitely check it out.
Also, I think there's a new Tremors movie that's in the works.
Reboot? A sequel?
I don't remember, but I came across that while I was looking this up. But yeah, I think there's one in the works. I don't think it's been announced if it's a reboot or a sequel yet, but it's been in the work for a few years and they're still talking about it.
Interesting. Well, hey guys, go check out our merch shop. And what else are we? What's going on? What's new? What's next?
Let's see. I had my convention this past weekend. Yes. I don't think I've got anything really big coming up for a while.
I don't think I do either. I get to
kind of chill for a bit. Yeah. I mean, I think the next thing both of us have coming up is our Halloween parties.
Yes, yep.
But that's still like a month away.
Yeah, we'll want to work on it soon though, because I got a vacation in the middle of it. So yeah.
And I got a vacation immediately after because I'm going to Universal Orlando.
Yay!
So
we'll have like lots of more recordings though. Yep. We've got tons more episodes planned at least until December.
Yep.
And
we're thinking we've talked about doing like a special Halloween episode. So you might get two episodes in 2 days.
Yeah, maybe.
Because you'll get one for Halloween and one on November 1st. But we'll see.
We'll see.
Thank you guys for listening once again. Yeah, check out our merch store, Society6. That's the number 6.com/CryptiPod.
Yeah.
Go buy our stuff. And then, you know, our Patreon link is in our little outro, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Sure is. All right, guys. have an excellent 2 weeks. We'll see you guys again in 2 weeks.
We'll see you guys again on October 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My
God. This year is just flying by.
It's flying by. Oh, my gosh.
We've been doing this since May already.
Hey. I know this is our episode 8.
Episode 8.
Yay!
It's exciting. All right. So, thanks, guys. We will talk to you later.
Yes.
Bye. Oh, and don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
If you'd like to learn more about us or read our deeper blog posts about our topics, head over to our website, conspiraciesandcryptids.com. There you can find links to all our social media and all your favorite podcatchers. If you like what you hear, leave us some love in the reviews on iTunes.
The more you like us, the longer we can keep doing this. And if you're really vibing off this little shindig and you're feeling generous, check out our Patreon. We have all kinds of fun goodies and extras for our devoted conspirators. Also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more updates. And don't forget,
Big Brother is watching.